In this case, it was a sting operation, which meant that there was a cooperating individual who posed as a money launderer with respect to the politicians, claiming to be a person who wanted to do business with the government and was willing to pay a bribe to grease the skids to make sure that he got the contracts or got them at a lower price or in some corrupt way. And unfortunately, the politicians were all too willing to do that. And so the way that scheme works is the person presents himself as something which he actually isn't. He's wearing a wire, just like you see on television shows, and pays money, which is usually in marked bills and videoed in places where the bribe is accepted. And that money then is received by the mayors or the assemblymen or whoever else it is that is accused of having done this. And those guys then deposit the money into financial institutions in a way that tries to disguise the source of the money as having come from the bribe payer. And so that disguising of that money received in bribe payment is the money laundering. In the case of the rabbis, it was a bit of a different scenario. There were actual people with monies that were, and it's not completely clear from the accounts from the U.S. Attorney's Office, but there were people in possession of monies that they wanted to hide from the authorities. There was, it looks like there was tax evasion money. There may have been other monies that was skimmed from businesses, etc. So you had a cash pool of money that people essentially didn't want the government to know about, and they used the charitable organizational arms that the rabbis and their facilities had set up, and for a percentage of that money, about 10% of the money, they were willing to either take a check and return cash or take cash and return a check, all of which was designed to disguise the source of the money as being illegal and turning it into money that looked like it had a legal origin, in this case, you know, from the charities themselves.
And so how can federal authorities unravel all this? How do they even know what's going on in the first place?
Well, in the case of the informant, they caught that fellow doing something bad a couple of years ago, and in the words of the Godfather, made him an offer he couldn't refuse, and so he became their source of information, and that's a widely accepted form of information gathering. In the case of non-sting operations, typically the government receives information from the financial institutions themselves. The financial institutions are under a legal obligation under the USA Patriot Act and the Bank Secrecy Act to have transaction monitoring systems that have complex algorithms that look for patterns of deposits and withdrawals that are suspicious, and then they investigate that, and if they see something that they can't explain or which they think is blatantly suspicious, they file what's called a suspicious activity report with the government, and the government begins to investigate it. As well, there's another report which is called the currency transaction report, which is a report that is filed by banks with the government when there's a cash transaction in excess of $10,000 on a given day or where there is a breaking up of what looks like it should have been a single deposit into multiple small deposits. We use the word structuring to describe that, and that too is reported to the government, and that launches the government's investigation. So the banks are in part deputies in the process, and they're doing a pretty good job at it.
And so this system monitors bank transactions continuously all the time?
Yes, there's a government bureau which is called FinCEN. It's a Treasury Department bureau, and FinCEN is sort of the brain trust of the anti-money laundering effort in government. So all of these suspicious activity reports and these currency transaction reports that the banks file go into FinCEN, and at FinCEN they have analysts and other economists doing regression analysis and other types of complex analytics to look at these transactions and determine what it is that is going on here, and then they send it out to the various FBI or DEA or Treasury agencies who themselves have smaller, they call them fusion centers, where they further analyze the data, and then they take to the streets, if you will, and begin their manual phase of it, which hopefully ends up in arresting people who've done bad things.
We're talking with Michael Zeldin. He's the global leader for the Anti-Money Laundering and Trade Sanctions Services at Deloitte Financial Advisory Services, former Justice Department official.
When you look at this particular incident that happened in New Jersey, they're saying there's up to 44 people now. Given your experience, is this like a normal one, an average one, above average, small? I mean, I would think that any kind of money laundering thing would have to be fairly complex.
Well, money laundering, generally speaking, is a complex undertaking. Remember, what these professional money launderers are doing is taking money from criminal organizations, typically, and for a fee, getting money back to the criminal organization in a way that disguises it. That's dangerous stuff, you know, because you could make the criminal organization upset by doing it wrong and get killed, or you could get it wrong yourself and get arrested. And so these things tend to be very complicated because there are a lot of eyes looking out for this sort of thing. In this case, in the politician's case, this was pretty blatant behavior on the part of both the politicians and the person who was posing as the possessor of monies willing to be paid in bribe. And what struck me about the political side of this case was just how blatant it was, how sort of unashamed it seemed these politicians were to just take cash, knowing that the source of money was a bribe, and willing to do so either to pay their own, you know, political operations for re-election or for their own, you know, personal use. It's, you know, disappointing, but it's not uncommon that bribes are blatant this way.
Yeah, it's kind of all in a day's work in Jersey, I guess.
Well, I don't know that. I don't know anything about New Jersey day's work. I just know from my days in the Justice Department that New Jersey doesn't stand alone in respect of this type of behavior. It takes place everywhere, from, you know, the west to the east and the north to the south. In the case of the rabbis, that was a little bit more unusual an undertaking. There have been other cases of clergy using charitable organizations to raise money for terrorist financing. We saw that before. This is not that, but it's not. It's just a variation on that theme. It's just, you know, using their charitable organizations to move money from one place to another. And there's no benign answer for this. You know, you can't say, well, this was only tax evasion money, or the source of this money wasn't, you know, to be used for
Yeah, it's ultimately not for orphanages and cripples and that kind of thing. It was just plain old greed.
Right. It wasn't going to anybody's benefit that needed charitable giving.
Right.
Going to pad their own pockets, and it's, you know, disgraceful.